Valley Broasters began as a home-style country cooking restaurant in Grain Valley, Missouri. The star of the menu was broasted chicken, juicy fried chicken prepared with a machine invented here in the U.S. Served with hearty mac and cheese and old-fashioned coleslaw, the chicken seemed like a perfect fit for rural Grain Valley. But it wasn't until the modest strip mall restaurant started offering Filipino food that it really hit its stride. I'm Gina Kaufman. To kick off today's Asian food show on Central Standard, KCUR's Andrea Tudhope takes us out to Valley Broasters for a taste of cuisine from the other side of the globe.
And nobody focuses on, you know, introducing to the American, you know, palate the Filipino food. And you know what? There is non-Filipino food here, but people are craving for it.
That's Chef Norma Thayer. She was born and raised in the Philippines. So just how unusual is her native cuisine? From her vantage point in western Missouri, she says there's nothing within a 400-mile radius. She worked as a nurse for 30 years, but her true passion is food. She and her husband, Philip, opened Valley Broasters in the fall of 2014. Soon after opening, a friend who worked down the strip at Grain Valley's Asian Market began pestering her to cook some of her native cuisine.
I said, oh, well, you know, I don't know. My kitchen is very limited, very small. And then he's like, oh, just one dish, you know, we'll try and see.
Well, she ended up cooking more than just one dish. You've probably heard of lumpia, fried spring rolls. But she made a few other lesser-known dishes for her friends, too, like a pork tamarind soup called sinigang and crispy patas, which are slow-cooked pork knuckles that, after broasting, develop a rich, greasy, but crunchy skin.
So all my Filipino friends come over here, and I start cooking for them, you know, one dish, two dish, three dish, you know, and then Thursday, and then they said, oh, can you do it on Friday, and then can you do it on Saturday? So I'm like, oh, my God, okay, fine. So then Wednesday, Thursday, Friday is Filipino day, and my husband's like, you know what? I think we're going to do it every day. And I said, okay, fine, you know.
She knew it was a risk, but she had a feeling this cuisine might appeal to local Vietnam veterans who were stationed in the Philippines. Sure enough.
They come here and said, oh my God. They said, this is the first Filipino restaurant. Now I can eat. After 20 years, I can eat this food. I said, do you have this? I said, yes. Do you have this? I said, yes, we do.
There are regional variations, but Norma says Filipino food is typically sour and sweet, not that spicy, but always fresh.
In the Philippines, we don't have any fridge. We don't have any freezer. We always like cook like what we gathered from, you know, the garden. If we slaughtered the pig today or something, we cook it right away. Vinegar, soy sauce, lemon, limes, that's how we preserve our food.
True to form, she visits the city market regularly and buys fresh meat two or three times a week. She shows me some of these ingredients and begins to prepare a popular Filipino dish called kare kare, a braised oxtail stew of sorts.
First process of cooking Filipino food. All the time we have garlic and onions first, and we brown those together.
Then she adds some of the braising liquid from the oxtail that's been slow cooking in a pressure cooker.
I put some peanut butter. Well, peanut butter I use in America, but in the Philippines we have to make the real peanuts, you know.
For seasoning, she throws in a bit of black pepper and some annatto, kind of like paprika, for color. After letting it cook a bit, she adds a few hunks of oxtail, sliced fried eggplant, and finally bok choy, which she saves for last to maintain a little bit of crunch. A lot of these ingredients and methods are familiar, but there are definitely some dishes she doesn't think Americans are ready for. Like balut, a fertilized, partially developed chicken egg that's traditionally boiled and eaten from the shell. Norma says it's important to make certain compromises with foreign cuisine.
A lot of restaurants, they don't succeed because, you know, you need to like, hey, this is the food that we prepare here and this is how we do it and this is what we put in it.
So far, it seems to be working. The broasted chicken is still on the menu, but now the shining star is the Filipino cuisine. It's become such a hit that they plan to open another location just for Filipino food in South Kansas City by the end of June.
I just love cooking and introducing to, you know, Americans. And my fellow Asians, preparing this food for them. When they leave, they're happy, and their children, and their neighbors, and their friends, and they sharing the picture and stuff on Facebook, and then commenting on Yelp and stuff. That makes me feel good. That makes me sleep so good at night.
That was Chef Norma Thayer at Grain Valley Broasters speaking with KCUR's Andrea Tudhope. We'll have to check out that new restaurant in South Kansas City when it opens. Speaking of new places, let's turn our attention to a bakery in Overland Park. It's called Tous les Jours, and it's not your typical French bakery. It's actually a French-Korean bakery, part of an international trend now decades in the making. Kushbu Shah is here to tell us how two South Korean bakery chains popularized treats that combine Eastern flavors with Western baking techniques. She writes for the online food magazine Eater. Hi, Kushbu.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Doing well.
Can you quickly describe what Tous les Jours is like for people who haven't been yet?
Yes, definitely. It's very charming, very cute, kind of what you would expect a French patisserie to look like. You walk in, there's like green pastel walls, a case of cakes, you know, a menu of coffee items, and just tons of baked goods spread around the store. But what's most fascinating about it is that when you walk in, there's a stack of trays and a number of tongs, and you're expected to take the tong and a tray and go around the store, putting on the tray what items you're interested in, and then you bring that up to the register, and they will wrap it all up for you.
How did you initially become intrigued by the baked goods sold at Tous les Jours?
I live in New York City, and there was a Tous les Jours in the Koreatown in Manhattan, and I walked in, and everything looked familiar, but everything was just slightly different when you took a close glance at it. There was croissants, but, you know, often they were filled with red bean. There was a number of custard buns, which I think are my favorite dish.
Custard buns. We'll have to hear about those.
Yes, definitely. And donuts and cakes. And while they looked like, you know, everything else, you know, you look at the cake a little bit more closely and it has whipped cream instead of like a thick frosting or a buttercream. You know, the donuts are fluffier looking and the breads are kind of a riff on a Wonder Bread, but even softer. And so I tried once and I was hooked from then.
How did the French-Korean fusion concept come about?
Right. So compared to baked goods as a whole, it's a relatively new phenomenon. It's kind of started in the 1980s in Korea. Up until that point, in the 70s and 80s, there was a handful of bakeries that would make French baked goods, turning out really, you know, standard croissants, like down to exactly how they would make them in the boulangeries in Paris. But a businessman in Korea saw a gap in the market, and so he opened Paris Baguette, which is probably the most famous Korean-French bakery chain. It is now as popular as McDonald's, you know, in Korea. It's everywhere. It's ubiquitous on every corner. So in the 1980s, he started making, you know, a number of French goods, but to give it appeal to the mass Korean market, he started, you know, fusing it with familiar flavors like red bean and matcha and kimchi to adapt it to the Korean palate. And it started to really take off. Up until that point, Koreans, for the most part, never really ate bread or baked goods at breakfast. It was usually typically a breakfast of noodles and soups and rice. And this sort of changed that for the country. And now bread and croissants are very common as a breakfast item.
In your article for Eater, you wrote about the contrast between the French colonization of Vietnam and the French relationship with Korea. And I'm curious if you can sort of spell out a little bit how that affects food.
Sure, definitely. With the colonization of Vietnam, you can see the French influences deeply, you know, integrated into Vietnamese cuisine, where it results in dishes like a banh mi, which has, you know, a Vietnamese riff on a French baguette that is then turned into a sandwich. With Korea, they remained relatively untouched by any sort of, you know, Western colonization. It came about as like a trend more than anything that was kind of primed by the entrance of American chains into Korea in the 70s and 80s. All of a sudden, everyone was like, oh, yes, we now have hamburgers and pizzas, but we want cafes, we want these coffee shops, we want these baked goods as well. And so, you know, the reception started really taking off in the 80s for these kinds of goods.
Let's talk about a couple of menu items at Tous les Jours. Your description of the whipped cream pan bread, also known as milk bread, sounds amazing. I was seriously like drooling when I read it. What is milk bread?
It's a very, very, very soft bread, very thick bread, a very white bread as well, that finds its origins in Japan, but it's very popular in Korea as well. And it's incredibly fluffy. Like, think of Wonder Bread, but extra fluffy, and it's very soft and slightly sweet, and makes wonderful kind of toast. They usually cut thick slices of it, will run it through a toaster, and then drizzle it with condensed milk, top it with ice cream, all kinds of things.
And then it's toasted after that?
It's toasted before you put the ice cream and toppings
sense.
On. Yeah.
How about hot dog pastries?
Right. Hot dog pastries are incredibly unique to kind of these Korean French bakeries. Hot dogs are very much an American introduction into Korea after the Korean War. You kind of see it throughout Korean cuisine. It's something that, you know, the country has really taken on as its own in a way, and they put it in a number of stews, especially one that features hot dogs and American cheese, but also kimchi and noodles, which is a very fascinating combination. But they started wrapping hot dogs with kind of like a sweeter pastry to make it a portable meal in a sense. And it's like drizzled with mayo and topped with cheese and sometimes a bit of condensed milk for this sweet, savory pastry. It's not quite what you expect from a hot dog dish.
And tell me about Saburo pastry. It's something I'm not familiar with.
Right. This is, I think, hands down my favorite items. Anything topped with Saburo is worth picking up. Saburo is a streusel, a Korean streusel that is made with peanut butter, actually. So it has, you know, sugar and all of the typical streusel ingredients and butter, but also peanut butter, which gives it a slight nutty taste. And so what they do is they will bake, you know, custard buns, which are buns filled with a typical custard cream or other, you know, fillings like chocolate, etc. And they'll top it before baking off the bun with this streusel. And so it becomes kind of like this extra crunchy cookie layer at the top. And it's definitely worth picking up.
Khushboo Shah, freelance food writer and photographer, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
And now our critics are on their way to help us find the best Asian restaurants in town. We're looking for the classics as well as hidden gems. Call in with your favorites and don't dilly-dally. We've got a packed show. 816-235-2888. I'm Gina Kaufman, KCUR's Central Standard. We'll be right back. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is Central Standard. And KCUR's food critics are here. Charles Ferruza of The Pitch, good morning.
Good morning, Gina.
We're also joined by the ulterior epicure food photographer, Bonjuing Lee. Hi, Bonjuing.
Hi, Gina.
And Pete Doolin, freelance food writer whose articles regularly appear in Feast magazine. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
This is the time to call in with your recommendations for the best Asian dishes to be found in Kansas City restaurants. The number to call is 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Charles, how have the Asian food offerings around town evolved or not in the time you spent eating and writing about food here?
You know, I moved here in 1984, and if anyone's that old to remember that, and, you know, there were lots and lots of Chinese restaurants, lots, there still are, but there weren't very many Thai restaurants. In fact, the only one I could really think of was Willie downtown. And there were no Vietnamese restaurants, no Korean restaurants that I remember. Although you could go to Trader Vic's and get some kind of ersatz version of all of those things. People have no idea what a plethora of options they have now that were not available 32 years ago.
Bonjuing, you grew up in the 80s in a Chinese-American household here in town, and you also eat and photograph food internationally. What's your perspective?
Well, in Kansas City, it's changed a lot. You know, when I grew up here, there were very few Chinese or Asian restaurants in general. Like, you know, I grew up around the time that Charles is talking about in Kansas City. But I got plenty of it at home because my parents cook Chinese food at home. So I eat with chopsticks at home, but then outside the house, you know, fork and knife.
Yeah. So how would you say that Kansas City's Asian food offerings are now? Like, if you were to compare us to other American cities?
Well, compared to other American cities, I think we're still, you know, we have a lower Asian population. So, but I think that now, for example, we have Asian markets where even if for home cooks, you can go out and you can get Asian ingredients, you can cook at home. That didn't exist when I was a kid. My mom used to work for TWA and she could fly for free on her employee benefits. And she would fly to Chicago to visit my aunt there, to go to the Chinatown there to buy ingredients.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, there was the availability of Asian ingredients was just not here.
What are some, just a couple of your top recommendations for Asian food in Kansas City?
Well, I really like the dim sum at Bowling's is one that I think is still pretty great. I mean, the variety is just amazing that they can do that.
Dim sum just quickly for people who aren't familiar.
Sure. Dim sum is a specifically regionally Cantonese, which is the southern part of China, like Hong Kong and Canton over there, that a tradition of sort of small dishes and little snacks that are famously now carted around usually, but I don't know if they do that Bowling's anymore. I don't think they cart them around. I think you order them and they bring them to your table. And it's usually a gathering of large, you know, it could be you could go with one person or you could go with a group of people and there's a Lazy Susan, and you kind of just share everything. But little plates, and literally translated, dim sum means dian xing, which means to touch the heart, or dessert, also the same word. So it's kind of this notion of little bites, little bits of flavor that you eat.
And do you think Bowling's does it well?
I think they do. Yeah, they do. The variety is incredible there. I also really like the smoked pork dish. It's called smoked pork at Kin Lin, which is a Chinese restaurant over on the UMKC campus. And it's in Chinese, it's la ro, which means winter meat. And it's a smoked bacon, basically, dish that's stir-fried.
And that's at Kin Lin?
Yes.
Over on, what, 51st Street?
I think so, yeah.
It's
right there.
Yeah, between Oak and Brookside Boulevard.
That's right, yeah.
So what is it about the way they prepare that dish that really appeals to you?
The smoked pork?
Yeah.
Well, they stir fry theirs with a little, it's spicy. I like that about it. And I just like the texture of the meat. It's a waxier type of bacon that's been cured. It's been salted and smoked. Sometimes you'll find it steamed, but they don't serve it that way. They stir fry it.
Pete Doolin, what are a couple of your go-to dishes in Kansas City for Asian food?
Sure. Spices Asian, which is a Thai restaurant in North Kansas City. I really like their Thai sausage. It's a pork sausage that they make themselves, and it's kind of like a bratwurst in the size of it, and they serve it sliced, and you can actually see the lemongrass and the garlic and the fresh herbs and spices in the sausage. It's really fresh and just full of flavor. And I've never really seen that type of dish at a Thai restaurant around in town.
So that spices Asian?
Yes.
I've never been.
Yeah, it's
relatively new.
It is. I think it opened last summer.
Mm-hmm. And is it Pan-Asian?
It's primarily Thai. They serve a few dishes from Laos also. The owners are actually from Laos, and they grew up near the border, and they predominantly prepare Thai food. They also own Bangkok Pavilion, I think, in Overland Park.
Yeah.
So, Pete, what's another recommendation from you in your generalized search for good Asian food in Kansas City?
Sure. Well, at Bob Wasabi, people that know me know that I rave about this place on West 39th Street. They serve great sashimi and other dishes like poke, hamachi collar, which is yellowtail. It's kind of like the neck portion of the fish that they season and then broil. And it's full of great flavor. And that's something that I'm starting to see like pop up in other menus elsewhere.
So that's a newer offering as well.
Yes, yes. And then they specialize in certain things like gooey duck, which is like a giant clam that's been fairly uncommon at sushi restaurants around town. That's something that gets people in the door when they find out that they have it.
So, Pete, you also have a relationship with Asian cuisine, a personal connection. In your case, with Thai food, tell us about that connection.
Sure. Well, my mother is from Thailand. She grew up in the central region about 75 kilometers east of Bangkok in a a rural area. Most of my family on her side are still there. I was born here in Kansas City, and so I grew up in a household where we ate just as much Thai food as we did classic Midwestern dishes. And I've picked up some Thai dishes and learned how to make those from my mom over the years.
So you've brought in a dish you made at home so that we could contrast it with what we typically find in Thai restaurants. What did you make?
Sure. It's a spicy beef stir fry with Thai basil, red curry, coconut milk, and string beans or long beans. And so it's kind of similar to like a red curry dish that you might find at a Thai restaurant. But this version is get a lot of Thai basil in it, so it's very aromatic. And I think when you're making home-cooked food, there's just a freshness to it, and you can tailor it, the flavor and the balance, in ways that you're not going to necessarily get at a Thai restaurant.
Well, let's go ahead and have you serve that to your other critics. And while you guys are doing that, I'm going to go ahead and take some calls from our listeners at 816-235-2888. Brent in Kansas City, welcome to KCUR Central Standard.
Hello. I would say one of the best dishes I've come across, I mean, it's not very good for you, but it's fatty pork with preserved vegetables.
Fatty pork with preserved vegetables. Okay, go on.
Yeah, it's basically pork belly. It's like bacon, but it's cut super thick. And the preserved vegetables are a pickled type green. And it's like a brown gravy. It's incredibly good. I have a Chinese friend of mine several years ago turned me on to it, and then I couldn't find it again. And ABC Cafe, which I think is the best Chinese restaurant in the whole metro. I mean, they have everything there.
You found it there?
Yeah. ABC Cafe. It's on 87th Street.
Okay. So Brent has found his beloved fatty pork with preserved vegetables at ABC Cafe. Bonjuing, you've been nodding while he was talking.
Yeah, it's a very famous Chinese dish that's called Kou Rou. And it's basically that's what it is. It's fatty pork. It's pork belly, usually. That's been red braised or with a lot of anise as well, star anise. And then usually with the pickled mustard greens that he's talking about, they're sort of a little bit, they're pickled, so they're a little acidic.
And the star anise,
it's a spice.
And it tastes a lot like licorice.
A little bit like licorice, yeah, you could say that. It's a warm spice, yeah, licorice, cinnamon.
Let's talk to Mindy. Mindy's with us from Westport. Hi, Mindy.
Hi.
What can you share?
I was listening to the radio program. I love like all Asian cuisines. I grew up in South Korea when I was a child. One of my favorite dishes in Kansas City is the Pad Woon Sen at Lulu's Thai Noodle Shop.
Yeah, tell us about it.
It's got cellophane noodles, which are made from mung beans. Red bell peppers, cilantro, mushrooms, and like wok tossed eggs. And it comes with a Pad Woon Sen sauce. It's got like fish sauce and Thai chilies. And it's just got like a nice blend of like flavors with the cilantro especially.
Yeah.
And the sauce paired together. It's really good.
Well, our Thai food expert is serving us his home-cooked food right now. So he's stepped away from his microphone. But when Pete sits back down, we'll get his take on Lulu's. Can you tell us, you mentioned that you grew up in South Korea. Is there any Korean food in Kansas City that you like?
I have not really eaten Korean food in Kansas City. I mean, my hometown, Leavenworth, there's a great Korean shop that's, like, locally owned. But
what's
I
that?
I still like to make, like, it's called Hyundai.
And is it still there?
I don't know. But they have, like, great bulgogi or bibimbap. So,
okay.
Well, I still like to make those dishes at home sometimes.
Cool. Well, thanks for that recommendation, Mindy.
Thank you.
Pete, first of all, it sounds like you recognize the restaurant she's talking about in Leavenworth.
Yes, actually. I just heard about this place from Jonathan Justice, the chef at Justice Drugstore, last week. He ate there and said the food was really wonderful. It's kind of a funky decor and atmosphere. I haven't been there yet myself, but I'm really curious to try it.
Bonjuring, have you tried it?
I have not.
Okay. Well, Mindy also mentioned that there's a dish she really likes at Lulu's called Padwoon Sen, but Lulu's in general, Pete, what would you say about Lulu's Thai food?
It's not my favorite, honestly. I know a lot of people really love it and enjoy it. But when I've gone there, like the food's just been inconsistent and not prepared as well as I would expect. So.
And you've recommended Spices Asian for Thai food in Kansas City. Any place else you'd recommend?
Well, the owners of Spices Asian, they also own Bangkok Pavilion in Overland Park, and they have a buffet there. I believe it's on the weekends, and it's a good opportunity to go there and try a great variety of dishes that you wouldn't necessarily see on a lunch menu.
Well, we've got a caller who is in on a search for a particular dish, so let's hear from Nash in Overland Park. Hi, Nash.
Hi. How are we doing?
Good. How about you?
Not too bad. My question, I used to live back in Tulsa, Oklahoma, back in the 90s, and I moved to Kansas in about 2002. I used to go to a Vietnamese restaurant up there, and they had a dish. It was so delicious, mouth-watering. Even if I talk about it right now, I can feel the taste. But it was cooked for like 12 hours. That's what they would say, and it was shank and beef feet, like a cow feet, and it was cooked, and they would serve it in a quart containers. But I just wanted to ask one of your critiques if they would know what the name of that dish was or where I would find it here in Kansas or Overland Park around metro area.
Anyone recognize what Nash has been describing?
I don't.
No, I haven't heard of it.
And this is a Vietnamese dish, Nash?
Yes.
Okay.
It sounds like something that would be like more of a home-cooked style recipe.
Yeah, maybe it was an invention of the owners of that restaurant.
Yeah, I'm sure it's something that's like native to that culture and like using that cut of the animal.
How regional does Asian food tend to be?
I mean, extraordinary in my opinion. I think it's one of the most regionalized cuisines. All of them, all the Asian cultures, I think, are highly regionalized.
I think that I agree. And what I'd like to see in Kansas City is more ethnic restaurants that focus on a regional specialty. Because just Thai food, for example, there are great differences in regional cuisine, whether you live near like the coastal areas and you'll specialize in seafood versus other areas that are closer to China, where you're going to see like more Chinese or Indian influences.
What region is this dish that you have prepared and that our critics have now tried from?
Well, it's a dish that I learned from my mom, so I guess it would be kind of the central region. There's, you know, curries, the use of curries, you know, historically came from India, but this, you know, incorporates coconut milk. Like in northern Thailand, a more mountainous region, there are more, I think, Chinese influences. To me, like the food's blander, and I don't care for it as much. I like a more highly spiced Thai food that's really well-balanced with sweet, sour, spicy.
So Charles Bonjuing, what do you think and what questions do you have for Pete, having tried his homemade beef dish?
It's absolutely delicious. I was going to say, is there some variation you can find of this dish in a restaurant locally?
Sure. You probably wouldn't see a version of this dish with the long beans or string beans in it. Another variation of this is what they would call gang, where you don't use coconut milk in it. So it's more of a dry stir-fried dish. And that red curry that's used in it is really going to come through a lot more, because there's nothing to kind of mediate that intensity.
I like it a lot, and the reason why is because I tend to find Thai cuisine in restaurants, at least, and my knowledge of Thai cuisine is not very deep, but it tends to be a little too sweet for me, and this one is not sweet. And so I really like this curry a lot.
I was asking Pete earlier that it seems to me that since I started eating Thai food in the Midwest and elsewhere, I guess, Pad Thai, which is sort of the signature dish, I guess, mm-hmm. it seems like it's getting sweeter and sweeter. Is that to accommodate American tastes?
I would think so. It's in Thailand, traditionally, like, you have all these other condiments that are kind of served on the side, so you can customize it to your liking.
And sort of like they do in Vietnamese restaurants here in Kansas City.
Yeah, and I think generally what I found is that I like a drier style of pad thai and more balanced. And so, like, when I get it and it's, like, really saucy and wet, it doesn't allow for that balance and, like, for those other flavors to come out. And I don't like it sweet either.
Pete, any quick tips for home cooks who want to try their hand at Thai cuisine?
Go to the Asian markets and get the fresh ingredients. That makes all the difference in the world, really. That's the first place to start. One common misconception with Thai food in particular is that it's all spicy and hot, and that's not true. Ideally, Thai food is really well balanced with sweet, sour, salty, a little bit of heat. Some dishes lean more towards one direction than the other, but it's, you know, not all Thai food's hot.
Yeah. Well, okay. So, and that is a funny thing, that the level of spice at a Thai restaurant usually culminates in Thai hot.
Right, right. And that's, you know, again, like in different, like within my own family, like my mom likes milder cooking and the way she prepares dishes. I like it a little bit spicier. My aunts in Thailand, who are excellent cooks, like, they like it even hotter there. They have just a greater tolerance for it.
Let's talk to one of our callers again. We'll turn to Catherine in Lawrence. Hi, Catherine.
Hi.
What can you share?
Well, I'm calling from Lawrence, and a restaurant that our family eats at on a regular basis is the Oriental Bistro on 23rd Street in Lawrence. And they have a variety, that they carry quite a variety, and sometimes that's a handicap because you can't always do everything perfectly, but they do a pretty good job. My favorite dish there, though, is in their Thai menu, and they do a yellow pineapple curry with tomatoes and basil, and it is really nicely balanced. It's not overly hot, but it has a big flavor, and I really enjoy that. They also do some recipes to request. My husband really loves Peking duck. And so for his birthday, he requested that a couple days in advance, and they did a beautiful full presentation of the Peking duck, which you usually don't see around here.
Peking duck?
Yes. It was quite lovely. They did a nice job of it.
Well, thanks, Catherine. That's Oriental Bistro in Lawrence?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Anywhere else, is Peking duck something that you typically see on a menu, or no?
You used to see it a lot more frequently than you do now because it's labor intensive.
It's very labor intensive. It's also kind of performance art, which kind of went out of fashion for a while, but, you know,
it's
back in the day. Yeah, but it's coming back now.
We should also say, Gina, that when Pete was talking about the heat levels of Asian food, you know, when I was growing up in the Jurassic Age, the only kind of Chinese food one would find in the Midwest and probably coastal too was Cantonese food. You really didn't see Szechuan, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, Szechuan dishes until after President Nixon went to China.
Wow.
And suddenly you would see those spicy dishes everywhere. But that was the first time in the 70s.
It's true. And part of that, what we were talking about regional, is if you go to San Francisco, for example, there was a huge population of Cantonese immigrants. So a lot of the Chinese food in San Francisco is Cantonese influenced.
Charles, you know, you had mentioned earlier the change you've witnessed in Kansas City's Asian cuisine, but I'm wondering if there are some classic Asian restaurants in Kansas City that you think are really worth going to.
Well, you know, I have a fondness, not everyone does, but I certainly do, have a fondness for maybe the classic, as Bon Chuang would say, American Chinese restaurant, which were, you know, Chinese dishes sort of Americanized to make them more palatable to American, you know, culinary palates. And I think the classic American Chinese restaurant in Kansas City would be Prince's Garden on Mornell. For one thing, it has the most extensive menu of dishes that were really American standards for Chinese food for such a long, long time. Like, you can hardly find egg, not that I really want to find it, but you can hardly find egg foo young on a menu anymore.
Describe what it is for the youngins out there who maybe have never seen it on a menu.
Isn't it, Bonjour, I'm going to have you correct me here, but isn't it sort of like a Chinese omelet?
Yeah, it's an egg-based dish, yeah, usually. And I've seen many variations of it. So to say what is egg foo young is kind of, but yeah, it's usually an egg of some sort, yeah.
And, you know, other classic American Chinese dishes would be lo mein, sweet and sour anything.
Sweet and sour anything, yeah.
And, you know, and these are all
beef
dishes.
Beef and broccoli.
Yeah, and these are all the dishes, you know, kung pao chicken, that we, you know, we grew up with and we accept them as standards, but I've heard that you really can't find a plate of General Zhao's chicken in Beijing.
Charles, the interior of Princess Gardens should also probably be acknowledged.
Oh my gosh, it's the greatest 1960s restaurant you've ever walked into.
Still.
Yeah. Although the current location was built in the 80s, but you know what I mean.
And anywhere else you want to recommend is like a classic Asian restaurant in Kansas City?
Classic Asian. That's a good question.
I think if Bowling's had not moved, that space also was a classic space.
Yeah, the one on
one in the old trade.
I prefer the new location, but yes, I agree. And it's just a classic restaurant. Period.
Let's talk to Jeffrey in KC North. Hi, Jeffrey.
Hi there. Good morning.
What can you recommend?
Well, I wanted to second the recommendation on spices up north. I really love those sausages too, and there's a great papaya salad that I had there also that was phenomenal. But there's also a brand new Vietnamese place that just opened up here, serving the Northland, kind of underserved for Vietnamese. It's called Bun Mi Phan, and it's a limited menu, and it's a very tiny little cafe. But I've been hooked on their pork belly tacos that are just phenomenal. They're doing spring rolls and the Vietnamese coffee and banh mi.
Anyone else have a Vietnamese food recommendation? Jeffrey's been recommending a Vietnamese place up north.
I thought that was just I'm interested in this. I thought that was just pretty much a banh mi shop. Are there other Vietnamese dishes on that menu?
Yeah, they're doing the rice bowls. They're doing banh mi's. They're doing the taco type dishes. It's pretty limited. There's just three or four things.
All right. Well, thanks, Jeffrey. Let's turn quickly to John in Kansas City. Hi, John.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Great. How about you?
Great. That pineapple tomato basil curry sounds pretty good.
What are you calling to recommend?
I hate to bring up Ken Lin again because he already mentioned it, but the first few times I went there, I thought it was kind of run-of-the-mill, and then I tried this recipe on their menu. It's number 20. I think it's called Spicy Ken Lin Chicken, and it's diced chicken, and it's breaded, and it's very spicy, and there's a few sautéed vegetables in it, and I've never had anything like it anywhere else, and I want to commend them for that recipe. And if you guys haven't tried it, anybody who likes spicy Chinese food, I tell you, you will love this. It's number 20.
Number 20 at Ken Lin, recommended by John in Kansas City. Pete, do you have one last recommendation for us?
Let's see. I like Chosun Korean. It's been a little while since I went there. A Korean friend of mine, Christy Lee, took me out there, and I was actually researching an article on soju, which is kind of a Korean type of alcoholic drink, similar to sake, and ended up eating this fantastic meal there. They do a hot pot, a kind of a communal style soup that's fantastic. They have traditional dishes like bibimbap, which is like a steamed rice bowl with vegetables and fried egg on top of it.
You know what I'm looking for is dulsat bibimbap. It's when they do the bibimbap, but they put it in a hot stone bowl and they go, I can't find it. Really? Do they have it at Chosun?
They do.
Okay.
I think they have it at Soban as well on Charmation Parkway.
That's good to know.
So that's name and location of that restaurant again, Pete?
Chosun, Korean barbecue. It's in Overland Park. I can't think of the exact address off the top of my head.
That's okay. And Bonjuing, before we go, is there a trend that is finding its way to Kansas City in Asian food? And yes, I recognize that sometimes what people call a trend in this context is actually a longstanding tradition that people in the countries of origin wouldn't call a trend at all.
Well, I think that Asian food in general is becoming more authentic because I think Americans are wanting more authentic Asian flavors and Asian cuisine. So I think that's one trend that I see. Also, you know, like one of my recommendations is Columbia Park Ramen Shop, which is this new ramen shop. And I think ramen's been sort of a trend in the United States for a while now, and that's come to Kansas City.
Well, keep those recommendations coming on Twitter for Asian Food in Town. We're at KCURCST. After the break, we'll be hearing what's new and noteworthy in Kansas City's food and restaurant scene. We'll get you caught up on what the food community is buzzing about in just a minute. I'm Gina Kaufman. Don't go away. Welcome back to KCUR's Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman, here with the food critics. And before we go, we want to look back on the first few months of 2016 and get a sense of what's big in Kansas City's food scene. Charles, what are some of the major new developments that you think are worth our listeners' attention?
Well, I think 2016 is going to be the year of the ramen noodle. You know, we've already had the opening of Columbus. That actually opened last year, but Columbus Park Ramen Shop, a smaller restaurant, is getting ready to open at 36 and Broadway called Shio. Very tiny place, but I think it's going to be very successful. It's really quite attractive.
Anything in particular that people are really anticipating about that particular ramen shop?
Well, I think they're going to make their own noodles at Shio, I believe.
I'm not sure. I think so as well. I can't confirm that.
I think I saw the noodle machine when I was in there, so I'm assuming it. And Komatsu is getting ready to open. Also on Broadway, I think, is that 38th or 38th in Broadway? Mm-hmm. And that's owned by Eric Borger, who is the owner of
Ilazarum.
Thank you.
So do you guys also think this is the year of the ramen noodle?
I mean, put it that way, that Charles just did, I think he's probably right. It's that's a lot of ramen for Kansas City in 1 year.
And then, as we were talking before the show, 75th Street Brewery, it's recently been sold.
To the Summit Grill people.
Right. The Summit Grill, they're going to move into that space. And then their current space around 75th Street is going to become a ramen shop as well.
Really?
So I think we're going to have an abundance of options for ramen this year.
And we think I should stress that the ramen we're talking about bears nothing, no resemblance whatsoever to the things that you get in the cellophane wrappers at the grocery stores.
Yeah, well, it's funny. I mean, the number of places opening all in such a short span of time, did they have awareness of each other, or do you think it was just a lot of people had the same idea all at once?
I think both, don't you?
I think a little bit of both. And actually, like, ramen isn't all that new. I mean, I remember several years ago when Westport Cafe and Bar, they had a food truck, and like they were doing ramen probably 3-4 years ago at least.
But it was a little under the radar, maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
Now you know McDonald's is going to start ramen soon. McRamen.
Well, Charles, are there any other new developments you want to draw our attention to?
Well, I'm trying to think of other new trends that are coming here. And, you know, donuts are making a big revival in Kansas City.
And, donuts and coffee shops.
Yeah. And, you know, and that's good. You know, I mean, Kansas City used to have a lot of donut places and not so much anymore. I have a hard time personally with the two words artisanal and donut put together. I have a resentment toward that. But okay.
Do you have a resentment against artisanal without donut?
Actually, I do.
I think it's donut without artisanal?
I'm all for that.
Bonjuing, you were just mentioning coffee shops.
Yes. There have been just great coffee shops that have kind of opened up. I mean, we know sort of some. But the thing is that some of them are starting to roast their own coffee. So, for example, like Post Coffee out in Lee Summit is roasting their own. Oddly, we've known for a while that's been roasting their own. Second Best, which is at 85th and Warnell, has been roasting their own recently, too, as well. So a lot of coffee roasters as well.
And there are a few other places opening that you wanted to tell us about.
Yeah, well, or have opened.
Right,
yeah.
Sorry.
This past week alone, I didn't have the most healthy week in eating, but I went to a place called Betty Ray's Ice Cream, which is over there on Warnell, I believe, right near Gregory and Warnell. It's a new ice cream shop. I think it just opened last week, and that was my dinner one
night. And it's all homemade, right?
It is all homemade. And then I also went to this place called Krokstrom Club and Market, which is a new Swedish restaurant that's on Broadway across from the Uptown Theater.
What did you think of it?
It's great. I mean, I actually just have been spending a lot of time in Scandinavia, and actually I just got back from Sweden, and I see where they're getting a lot of their dishes from. They're trying to, you know, recreate some very Swedish traditions, like fika, which is the Swedish tradition of coffee and sweets, and a lot of the open-faced sandwiches, the smørrebrød, and things that we might more associate.
Bonjour, is that open for lunch and dinner?
I don't know if they're open for lunch. I know they're open for dinner for sure, but I don't know about lunch. Okay. I don't think they are, actually.
Okay.
I think they're open for fika, which starts at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, early afternoon.
Well, we'll check on that.
Yeah, check on that, though, but I'm not sure.
Anyway, what is your favorite dish you've tried there?
At the Clubstrom? I really like their Swedish meatballs. I just had them in Stockholm a couple weeks ago, and I like theirs. That was pretty good.
I bet they don't taste anything like the ones at IKEA.
Never had the ones at IKEA, actually.
So that's can you say the name of it? I'm so sorry, I can't do
that's
it.
Okay. I think it's pronounced Krokstrom, KROKSTROM, Club and Market, but Club is spelled KLUBB.
And it's on Broadway in Midtown.
That's right.
Pete, your recommendations, your restaurant news, is very much in keeping with our Asian food theme from earlier.
Yes. So earlier, a caller had mentioned Banh Mi Phan, the Vietnamese sandwich shop that recently opened north of the river. And we also, Charles mentioned Shio Ramen Shop that's coming soon. I noticed also that around 15th and Grand, there was a short-lived restaurant called Mi Asia that was a kind of a pan-Asian place. And prior to that, it was Sea Asian Bistro, which never actually quite opened. And prior to that, it was Willy Cafe. And since Mi Asia is closed, there's a sign that's gone up for a Thai restaurant. And I can't think of the exact name. I want to say it's like Coco Thai. So I'm keeping an eye on that to see when that opens and what they actually offer. Hopefully they'll have more success than the predecessors.
Yeah. And Bondring, did we get to your recommendation of Frankie and Fairlane's?
Oh, Frankie Fairlane's. Well, it opened last summer, but I went for the first time, and it seems fairly new. It's in Lee's Summit. And it's the strangest mix, but it's tacos and sliders. Hmm. And they also have hot wings, too, which were really good. But it's right there in old downtown Lee's Summit.
And just to let our listeners know, when we were talking about Krokstrom Club and Market earlier, the Swedish restaurant, they are currently open only for dinner. They open at 4. So that answers that question. Before we go, Charles, finally, some sad news, actually. Kansas City unexpectedly lost one of its major food lovers, Bonnie Winston, who died in a car accident, if I understand
right,
correctly.
Right, in Sarasota, Florida. She was in a car accident. And, you know, Bonnie was back when this show, before it became the Gina Show, but when it was the Walt Bodine Show.
It's not the Gina Show.
I know it isn't, but I'm just going to say that anyway.
Okay.
You know, she would be on the panel with Walt Bodine. She was very vivacious. She loved the innovation of food. She loved, you know, traveling. And when she would travel, she would always, you know, bring back a dish to introduce to Kansas City in some fashion. And I met her in the early 1980s when she was still, you know, establishing the menu for the Prospect of Westport, which is was a real trend-setting restaurant at the time. And she'll be missed. She was interested and curious and fascinated, and she wanted to bring everything she had learned from her travels back to Kansas City.
What do you think people will remember her for, and how do you think they'll remember her? I mean, will anything formal?
I think people remember her for her interest in learning, and she was a very vivacious and funny person, really intelligent, really gracious, but really a funny person.
I had the opportunity to interview her once, and she really was lovely. And to everyone she touched, I'm really sorry for your loss. And that does bring us to the end of this morning's show. If you missed our search for great Asian food on the air, never fear, the list we compiled will be available online later today at kcur.org. Bonjuing Lee, Ulterior Epicure, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Gina.
Pete Doolin, freelance food writer and exquisite home cook who made us some delightful beef and long beans today in a Thai curry dish. So good. Thank you.
Thank you, Gina.
And last but certainly not least, Charles Ferruzza of The Pitch. This has been great, as always.
Thank you, Gina.
Check out all of this morning's food stories at kcur.org/centralstandard later today. And be sure and sign up for our podcast while you're there. That's kcur.org/centralstandard. KCUR's Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Sylvia Maria Gross, with Fridays Like Today by associate producer Jen Chen. We get lots of help from interns Coy Duggar and Glenn Frizzell. Special thanks to contributor Andrea Tudhope. Linda Scher runs the board for us, and our music is by Spoonbender Labs right here in Kansas City. I'm Gina Kaufman. Have a great weekend.